Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dr. MC's Self-Care Cabaret Podcast. I'm Teresa Melito Connors, a doctoral-level educational administrator and mental health practitioner focused on helping you, our world's helpers. Every day, we have a choice to prioritize our well-being, to incorporate reflection, recovery, renewal, and resilience strategies into our lives. However, those of us who step up and serve our communities in healthcare, education, nonprofit spaces, and more can struggle with putting ourselves first. I've seen this firsthand, and it's a challenge. Enter Dr. MC's Self-Care Cabaret Podcast. Here, we have real, intimate conversations with leading experts passionate about accessible, sustainable self-care in its 10 domains. It's all about the hard work we can take on together to find our spotlight. And before we dive into today's guest, I want to talk a little bit about how I got interested in Ayurveda and started studying Ayurveda. It actually goes back to how I started getting interested in self-care. This was about 2011, fresh out of grad school, round one, with my master's in school counseling, ready to head off into the world of being a guidance counselor. And I got hired at a therapeutic high school here in the greater Boston area. And I quickly realized that this was going to be a fast road to burnout, working with the population I was working with and at the pace I was going. But at the time, I thought it was something that was just special for me, that no one else experienced, you know, stress or anything at their jobs. So it kind of sent me on a little bit of a journey. I actually had a conversation with my program director at the time and asked her, you know, just let her know that I was really feeling stressed out and was kind of struggling, you know, separating work-life balance and boundaries and whatnot. And she said to me, "You need to learn to not take the work home with you." And I didn't know exactly what that meant, but what I took it as, well, this is a me problem and I have to go fix it. So I started down a kind of a rabbit hole of researching like how to manage this. And I stumbled upon the works of Deepak Chopra, Cheryl Richardson, Wayne Dyer, Louise Hay, etc. And especially when learning about Deepak Chopra and all of his work. And I was also, you know, somewhat familiar with him from other areas of my life as well. But he would talk a lot about Ayurveda. And I thought, what is this? So I started looking things up and I stumbled upon a practitioner in the Boston area named Kate O'Donnell. And I went to several workshops with Kate. She taught me so much about Ayurveda and her workshops were phenomenal. I credit her for kind of helping me set up my Dinacharya, which is my morning routine, my daily routine, and some of the other Ayurvedic principles that I incorporate into my life definitely came from workshops and classes with Kate over the years. And so I am so excited to welcome her today to the podcast as today's guest. How cool is that? So if you're not familiar with her work, Kate O'Donnell is the author of three Ayurvedic cookbooks, including The Everyday Ayurveda Guide to Self-Care, The Everyday Ayurveda Cookbook, A Seasonal Guide to Eating and Living Well, and Everyday Ayurvedic Cooking for a Clear, Calm Mind, 100 Sattvic Recipes. She is a nationally certified Ayurvedic practitioner and founder of the Ayurvedic Living Institute. She is also a faculty member at the Kripalu School of Ayurveda and the Yoga Veda Institute. And without further delay, here is our conversation. All right, Kate, we are up and running. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. MC Self-Care Cabaret Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So let's dive right in. Would you like to tell me a little bit about how you like to practice self-care?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm a big morning person when it comes to self-care.
Okay.
Yeah, which I've always kind of taught that once everyone else in your household wakes up, you're fair game. Mm. So, you know, that even getting up like 10 minutes, you know, and like a little bit goes a long way in the morning. But for me, I have to establish that like relationship with myself before I do anything else, or I'll just, it's like whatever comes into my field in that first 10 or 20 minutes of my day, really, it sets my mind on a trajectory. So whatever that thing is, like if it has to do with just sort of like sensory care, that's ideal. And I feel like it like prepares me to just be myself and inhabit this body as I go forward into the rest of the day, rather than inhabiting just the mind, you know, and like thoughts and stories and like tasks and things like that. It's like self-care to me is very much about being embodied, like caring for this body.
Yeah. I love that. And I love how you highlight that a little goes a long way, because I think sometimes folks get caught in the trap that if they don't have a lot of time, then why bother doing anything at all?
Absolutely. And I, you know, I have a history of being an obsessive self-carer.
Uh-oh.
And that in itself causes dis-ease.
Correct.
You know, so I have learned that in some ways, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, like also to trust the body, that the body is naturally detoxifies in a 24-hour cycle. It naturally takes nourishment in a 24-hour cycle. And it doesn't need me like interfering all the time.
You know? The body is really smart. We don't give it a lot of credit.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's... again, to me, if I just keep it to things that support the strength of this body, you know, so that I just like age well and have less pain and, you know, digest my food well and those sorts of things. Very simple, very simple stuff, very simple intention behind it. And that's helpful. That's helpful to me to just keep it as like, you know, it's just part of being in a body.
Yeah, beautiful. A little goes a long way, and it can be simple. Those are definitely some great, great takeaways for sure. And definitely things I try to kind of let folks realize and ingrain in them through my work as well. So I love that. So we have had a couple of conversations around Ayurveda on the podcast previously to this episode. But I'm wondering if you can describe for our listeners, like, what is Ayurveda?
Mm-hmm. It is India's indigenous medical system. It's been around for thousands of years. There is textual knowledge. You know, I would say it began as an oral tradition, and then there are texts that go all the way back to, you know, say 2000 years old. And then of course there's modern medical texts as well.
Sure.
And Ayurveda has a big focus on like, maybe a lot of the medicines we're used to today, it has a big focus on prevention and self-care and longevity. So ultimately Ayurveda is described as a longevity science.
Yeah.
Which the idea is that, you know, if you take good care of yourself, then you will be able to do what you're here to do in this body, you know? So there's a lot of herbal medicines. There's dietary recommendations, a big aspect of seasonal living, sort of, you know, changing your diet and your self-care seasonally is a big part of the prevention. And it's very much about keeping the body in a state of balance, where the body gets thrown off balance by certain qualities in our environment, like being too dry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it dries out your skin and then eventually your bones, you know, so you get osteoporosis, or being too hot. And then you end up with inflammation, you know, and so the seasons have also their effect on that, you know, living in a dry climate, living in a hot climate. So we take things like that into account. And all the foods that we eat have certain qualities. Some are heating, some are drying, you know, so it's like there's all these opportunities in your normal life to practice medicine in Ayurveda. And when a disorder is expressing in the body, the science also does go into treatment. You know, it's not just prevention. I think that's maybe a common misperception you learn about Ayurveda, but also it does go into surgery, disease, all that sort of thing.
Right.
And it works. It I find it works really nicely to help bodies withstand Western treatments, actually. So for more serious disorders, I feel like Ayurveda works really well as a palliative care in conjunction, you know, because pharmaceuticals can be so hard on the body, hard on the digestion, you know, things like that. Absolutely. So, yeah. So in cases where people are using Western medicine in serious ways, it doesn't mean Ayurveda's out. There's actually still a lot there that can help people.
Yeah. One of the things I love about Ayurveda is that it really strives to get though to the root of the issue. So it doesn't necessarily, whereas Western medicine might be quick to throw some drugs at it or like kind of maybe a Band-Aid effect, whereas Ayurveda strives to go deeper to get to the root of whatever dis-ease or whatever it is you're experiencing. Would you say that's accurate?
Definitely. Yeah. So that root often can be traced back to a quality or a group of qualities, right? That, you know, things got too hot and too moist, you know, so there's all these inflammatory processes going on in a body. And, you know, if you just treat the inflammation of, say, the sinus, where the problem has found a place to lodge in the body, so you clear the sinus, but then the inflammation is still raging in this example, right? And so the inflammation can then pop up somewhere else in the body. So until we address, you know, the excess heat and moisture situation that's causing the expressions of symptoms to happen in different ways in different places, then it'll just keep coming back, maybe in different shapes. But yeah, so the cause of the cause of the symptoms, you know,
Yeah, I think it's a really cool, and I'm not certainly not as versed in it as you are, but it's really cool to study and to learn about. And I think it makes a lot of sense, in my opinion, as to how we kind of think about things. And even when you get into like the qualities and like, you know, we're going to be in knee deep summer by the time this episode releases, you know, that's very, for at least us here in the greater Boston area and the East Coast, you know, it's going to be hot. So that's not necessarily the time maybe for spicy foods and, or to keep, make sure you're keeping those things in balance. So you want to talk a little bit about maybe just some of the examples of like foods, like what's a maybe a cooling food versus a heating food and stuff like that.
Yeah. So the way we look at everything in Ayurveda breaks down to the five elements: space, air, fire, water, earth, kind of like Chinese medicine has also an elemental basis. So those, each of those elements is a substratum for quality, like fire is hot and space and air are cold, right? So we look at it through that lens. So anything that contains fire is hot. So things that are salty, things that are spicy, and things that are sour. And sour is like very much an action that happens when we ferment things. So fermented foods and drinks are heating. Those are great example of things that that heat you up. So like whiskey is a very clear example. You know, you have it literally burns, you know. So all of our like alcohols and kombuchas and things like that increase heat in the body. Things that are cool are usually things that, like, when you have a sip of whiskey, it feels hot. You know, when you have something cool, you feel like refreshed, you know, like the Irish spring feeling. And that cucumber is like a really easy example. You know, you can feel that when you eat a cucumber, that it is cool. So also something like cilantro. We tend to put cilantro on spicy food as a balancer. Yeah. And then something like milk is actually cool. You know, it's like, it's not an acidic hot thing. It's a, it's quite the opposite. And then we find a lot of cooling, like watermelon. All the melons are very cool. You know, we tend to reach for those in hot weather as well, you know. And because if something's like served on ice, it doesn't make it cooling.
Right. I was just thinking that.
Yeah. So like your iced coffee, like coffee is one of those acidic hot foods. So even if you ice it, it's still going to increase heat in the body. and feed those kind of inflammatory hot processes, irritability and acid stomach and things like that.
I just had a flashback of working with you and showing up, I think, at one of our appointments, and I had this giant ice water thing, and you were like, okay, cool. How much of that do you drink a day? And I don't know, some ridiculous amount of I was drinking, and you were like, yeah, no, that's not. Like, I mean, like, oh, but it's ice. You're like, no, I think it was some sort of tea mixture. And you were like, no, that's not, that's, you're putting out the fire in your belly, I think is actually what you said.
Right, right. Iced drinks. Yeah. Are one of those kind of general, not great ideas in Ayurveda, because your belly is, it's a fire in there that digests your food. So when we douse it with cold drinks, it inhibits our ability to digest food, but also to absorb and assimilate it later down the line. Yeah.
I think it's fascinating when you start like thinking about it in that way. And I love how Ayurveda kind of breaks down seasonally, like different things. And, you know, sometimes, you know, food, whatever, we don't need to get into food politics, but, you know, we can get sometimes foods that are not seasonally appropriate in other seasons. And that isn't maybe the best thing, because from an Ayurveda perspective, anyway, you know, it's out of season. It's kind of out of balance, right?
Yes, right. Yeah. Seasonal eating, like eating the things that are in season where a person is considered like a wonderful health regimen. Local seasonal food, which in New England can be a bummer. Yeah. Get really sick of apples.
Yeah, apples, pumpkins, squash.
Yeah, I love squash. I could actually eat squash all the time, but I get so sick of apples being like the fruit, you know?
The fruit of fall.
Yeah.
Some strawberries and cantaloupe back.
Right, exactly. So when those things are in season, I kind of go nuts on them.
Yeah.
So I'm going nuts on fruit from like June, July, August. And then I start going nuts on squash in the fall. And I do very much follow a seasonal diet. And I like that it creates variety for me in my diet. So I'm eating everything, you know, I'm enjoying all the different food groups over the course of an annual cycle, just not all like in the same week.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's pretty cool. So if someone was maybe interested in getting started learning about Ayurveda, is there a place you kind of recommend they begin?
I mean, to toot my own horn, I think my first book, the Everyday Ayurveda Cookbook, that's what it's for. And food and digestion are such an important part of Ayurveda, because our body is built of food, and our five element composition is the result of the food that we eat. And all the science teaches that all diseases and disorders at some point, if we go back to the cause of the cause, began in the digestive tract. So like, we're all about kind of easy to digest foods, you know, and eating like heavier foods at certain times of day and lighter foods at other times of day. And in that book, the Everyday Ayurveda Cookbook, I teach like all about the five elements and all about the qualities of so many different foods that appear seasonally. And it's great if your audience is kind of maybe a little more New England-y, they'll love it, because it's like, that's where I live and, you know, wrote the book. But people in other climates can also just sort of apply the qualities of their own seasons and be like, okay, my place is, you know, hot and dry. And so you can sort of choose the foods that are most beneficial for you based on your body and your climate. And then it's just simple recipes.
Yeah.
Because the idea is that if food is our medicine, we want to take an interest in it. You know, just take an interest in food as medicine. And so that's why I wrote a cookbook. It was like, let's try to lure everyone into, you know, the kitchen a little bit.
Absolutely. And
yeah. So I do think that's a great place to start. Yeah.
Yeah. You're allowed to toot your own horn. Absolutely. And if I didn't think so highly of you, you wouldn't be on the show. Cause I mean, I love your work, and I have all three of your books, and they're not only are they super helpful, very accessible, well done, they're also just aesthetically pleasing. The photography is gorgeous. Like, they're beautiful books. So we'll definitely make sure all your info is linked and folks know where to find the books. But that's good to know that would be what you would recommend is a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's easy too. Like, I don't spend a lot of time in the kitchen. Like, I don't love to spend a lot of time on complicated meals. So it's simple, anything you can do in like 20, 30 minutes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So that's a great segue into, as I said, this is going to air around probably late July, August-y. So what's like your favorite recipe that kind of for that time of year?
Summer favorites. I have this quinoa salad that I do a lot in the summer. And quinoa is this grain that's a little bit lighter. If you think about it, it's like, it's fluffier. It's not as kind of sticky as something like rice.
Okay. Yep.
So I gravitate towards it. It's just a little drier, fluffier, lighter. So in kind of humid and hot weather, I will gravitate towards quinoa instead of the rice or buckwheat or some of the like sort of heavier things. And I will cook the quinoa, and then like the last 10 minutes that it's cooking, I'll throw in seasonal vegetables.
Okay.
So I'll cut up like zucchini, any greens I might have. Sometimes I'll throw like celery, like what, basically whatever. That's
what
I
have. Yeah.
Yeah. So I throw whatever on top and let it steam with the quinoa for the last 10 minutes. And then I will toss it all together at the end, and I'll use a bunch of fresh herbs. So I'll use olive oil, lemon, and tons of fresh herbs. So like whatever's in the garden, you can grab mint will work, parsley, oregano, thyme, like all of that stuff. And I just toss that all together with just olive oil and lemon. It's amazing how good it is. And obviously salt, a little turmeric, which makes it pretty, gives it a little color.
Yeah.
Got a lot. If I feel like I need more, I'll like plop hummus on top of the salad, or I will put chickpeas in it.
Nice.
And toss that all together. Yeah.
And do you eat it when it's cold? Do you wait for it to get cold? Do you eat it when it's warm?
So that's what I like about this. So like the ice water thing, Teresa, that we've already discussed, eating cold, like refrigerator cold food is also not a fantastic for the gut. For myself, it like hurts when I eat cold food. So what I like about the quinoa salad, however, is that you can eat it when it's hot, or you can eat it at room temperature. So it's like my number one barbecue bring food. I bring the salad to the barbecue, and then it's room temp when we eat it, and that's fine. Yeah, so it's good for those like really hot days where nothing sounds good.
Yeah.
The other thing, I could go on all day. This is like my favorite time of year for eating. Although I think I would say that all year actually, but I like to do a watermelon cooler.
Yes,
just the flesh from a watermelon, and I will put it in the blender with a couple leaves of basil.
Oh, delicious.
Yeah. And I'll just drink it like with a straw. That's fantastic. The other one I do is the cantaloupe cooler. So I'll throw the cantaloupe in the blender with a pinch of cinnamon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm telling you, there's something about cantaloupe and cinnamon. Who knew? Right. But it's really good. And I'll enjoy the fruit drinks like by themselves, because fruit does digest faster than other food. So some people are likely to notice that if they have those drinks and they also have other food at the same time, that they might notice bloating, potentially gas. So these are a nice, like, I have usually one of those in the morning, first thing in the morning, and then I'll eat, something else an hour later, or I might have it like as my afternoon cocktail, before dinner, kind of thing. You come home, sit on the porch and have one of these amazing things. Yeah. And then an hour later, whatever, dinner is ready. And then you're not mixing the fruit with the food, which is ideal for digestion. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. That all sounds delicious. I'm already thinking, I'm like, let me make quinoa salad this summer. That sounds really fun.
Once you get started on it, it just like you won't get sick of it. You'll just keep making it. You throw different kinds of beans in it, different vegetables. Right.
Well, then I keep mixing it up so you don't get sick of it. Did you hear the news about our exciting new offering from the Self-Care Cabaret? We're calling it Talkback. If you're familiar with the theater space, you may have participated in a talkback before. After a performance, the cast and crew will come back on stage to chat with the audience and answer questions. Think of it as a casual guided discussion. Inspired by this and by popular interest, we've come up with a talkback for the Self-Care Cabaret podcast. Groups will listen to a podcast episode or two of their choosing, then I'll come and lead your discussion either in person or virtually of those episodes, expanding on the big ideas. It's a great option for groups looking for short, impactful professional development, or smaller teams looking to get an introduction to self-care and well-being. We have done a few of these so far, and let me say, they have been so much fun. So if you're interested in bringing a talkback to your group or organization, email podcast@drmcselfcare.com. And now, on with the show. One of your books, I think it was, is it your third one? The Ayurveda Guide to Self-Care? Is that one the third one? Yeah. That one, when you released that one, I got really excited.
Right?
Like, so I'm wondering, like, in your experience releasing that book out into the world, and it's been a minute since I've looked at it, I'll be honest. That came out a couple of years ago. Wondering if there's something that, like, you just wish people would understand about, like, the connection between Ayurveda and self-care.
Yeah, that's a great question, Teresa, because it's kind of why I wrote the book, is that I felt like people learned about Ayurveda, and Ayurveda does have these like self-care rituals that are baked in for longevity, you know? So you wake up in the morning and you scrape your tongue and you splash your eyes with cool water, you know?
We love a Dinacharya here on the podcast.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, maybe we oil the nose and the ears, you know, so it's just this basic care of the sense organs. And then, you know, there's the oil massage and there's the oil pulling, and like people are very curious about all this stuff, but I found that people didn't know like when to use what. Back to where we started, which was keeping it simple and not trying to do it all. I found that like people feel like, oh, I have to do all the Ayurvedic routines or I'm not healthy.
Sure.
So what I wanted to kind of flesh out there was a little more of like how each of these practices works, like what it actually does, you know, in your body. And so if your eyes bother you, maybe you want to focus more on the eye stuff. You know, if you have receding gums, maybe oil pulling is worth bringing in, you know. And that there's also the seasonal changes. So maybe you need more oil in a dry season and you don't have to worry about it when it's wet in your climate, you know? So I felt like people weren't like getting all that, connecting all those pieces, that, you know, something like oil massage is important to balance the dry quality. So if one is not dry, if you don't experience, you know, dry skin or dry poops, or dry scalp, dry eyes, and if those things don't bother a person, then they can put their energy elsewhere.
Right.
And get better results.
Yeah, I could definitely see, though, how people get kind of whipped up in the idea. It goes back to, like, you know, if they don't have a ton of time, well, if they can't do, like, all the things, why bother doing any of the things? And I'm always like, no, if you only have 5 minutes and, like, you know, you take a quick walk or just do some gentle stretching or throw on your favorite song and have a 5-minute dance party, like, that is still beneficial. That is still good. Do that.
Yes. Yeah. It's almost more beneficial. I feel like, you know, you've probably noticed this, that the potency of self-care grows with time. So it's like you actually need to do less and less, because your body, it's like you just like lock into this zone.
Yeah.
Like the 5-minute dance party, and your body's like, yep, we got this.
Yeah,
like,
we're good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think too, if you're constantly doing those things in a foundational way, you tend to stay more in balance just in general. So then when something happens, you're not going to, maybe, you know, you might get a, pulled a little off balance here and there or whatever, but it's not, you're going to be able to recover more quickly too.
Yeah. Yes.
And be able to bounce back more quickly. And like I always say to folks, you know, when you practice self-care, it's not going to make stress go away, but it can change your how you're going to react to the stress. If you know, if you have those foundational practices. So same thing with Ayurveda. If you can weave some of that in, then that's liable to keep you more just in a balanced state. And we've, you know, we've talked a little bit about kind of balance and whatnot. You want to talk a little bit more about how Ayurveda kind of views, like maybe a little bit into like doshas and how that works and how maybe somebody may know if they're like out of balance in some ways?
I can try like a lightning round, you know, doshas and early signs of imbalance. So those five elements that I mentioned, when they make up a body, they compound into three pairs that do specific jobs. So they're like physiological functional compounds in the body. They're called vata, that which moves, pitta, that which transforms, and kapha, that which lubricates. Hmm. Right? So vata is air and space, and it's dry and it's cold and it's mobile. You know, like a cloud in the sky is never sitting there. You know, it's moving all the time. And pitta is fire and water. So the water contains the intensity of the fire. And that's the hot one. It's hot. It's sharp. It's intense. It's also moist, a little bit oily, where your vata is dry. With pitta, you'll see more oiliness. And with kapha is earth and water. So it's all the structure and the lubrication in the body. So it's very moist. It's cool. There's no fire there, right? It's not as cold as vata, but it's cool. And it's moist, heavy, and dense. So it's very stable, unlike vata and pitta, which both are a little more erratic and intense. So these three compounds like create balance in a body. And based on our DNA, we all have an elemental makeup you sort of get from your, you know, your parents. And then you, you know, so we might call someone a kapha type or a pitta type or a vata type. And that's because of the elements that compose their body. So a vata type will feel more dryness. And they're the ones who run cold. And they have a hard time sitting still, most likely. Right. So they can work on getting better at that, but it's like they like to move. They're movers. And your pitta types will be the ones who run hot. They do not like hot weather. There's more of an irritability, is a tendency towards being intense and irritable. And they have a great appetite, can digest anything. Because that fire, you know, is strong in them. And then the kapha types will be like a larger frame because there's more of that earth there. There's more mucus. There's a tendency towards mucus. So these people might notice more congestion, like a little sniffle in the morning, you know, or if you eat ice cream, maybe a little sniffle. The lungs can be a thing. It's more of a tendency for moisture to kind of hang out in the lungs in a kapha type. And kapha types like to chill, where your vata types like to move, right? Mm-hmm. So most people aren't just one thing, you know, people are dual doshic. So I think as people listen to this description, they might feel like, oh, you know, well, there's probably, I'm probably a both vata and pitta, you know, or both pitta and kapha, or whatever it is. Yeah,
that's me.
It's most people have, right, are a combination. Like I'm more of a vata pitta type. So I've got like the air and the dry, and I've got the hot. Right. And so then there's the interaction of the two doshas, you know. And it takes time to really like get it, you know. I think like you like to study it. You've said, you know, so probably over time got, so you felt really comfortable in knowing what elements are most prevalent for you. So when one of those, a dosha means that which is at fault. So over the thousands of years of observation, the Ayurvedic masters could see that there, when there was a disease process in a body, it always went back to an imbalance of one of these three compounds. So it's very much like the Greeks had the wind, bile, and phlegm, the three humors, it's the same, right? And so keeping those humors or those physiological compounds in their relative state of balance, like how they want to be in your body, which is different than how they want to be in my body, right? Like you might be a little drier than me, but your body is like in balance that way, right? So there's no like universal, this is balance, this is a balanced body. But what we do have is the knowledge of the early signs of imbalance. So with the, you know, it's like the grouping of qualities of vata. So it's dry, it's cold, it's mobile. So if we get too much of that in a body, it usually is because a person's been traveling too much, too mobile, or they're too busy, right? Or they never like calm, they haven't learned how to like do calming activities, or they drink iced water all the time and they eat cold food all the time or whatever it is, right? Yeah. So we cause imbalances through our choices sometimes. And then with that, you're going to see wind, like disturbance of wind, the air element. So these people, they might have cold hands and feet. So like the circulation is affected. They definitely have like bloating and gas and the kind of a windiness. Yeah. So these are the people who will be like, oh no, beans. And so we're looking at like bloating and gas and possibly constipation because of the dry quality. Maybe we see a dry skin and like maybe, you know, to the point where it's like bothersome, you know. And because we all get a little dry skin in the winter in New England, right? But like beyond what's kind of normal, we could say. And if those signs, it's like, well, I always had dry skin, but nothing like this, you know?
Right.
And you're like bloating and all, every time you eat, you feel bloated. And then you're like a wind bag, you know? And so these little signs are the early ones that can tell a person that something's going on with vata. And so then we'll introduce some opposite qualities. We'll keep the person warm. We'll take away the ice water. No, we'll make sure they're eating warm food and food that's not too drying, you know, but has natural fats in it. We add a little oil to their food. You know, we might oil their body. We make sure they're wearing like a hat when they go outside. You know, just these things are common sense.
Yeah. No, it's so cool though.
Yeah, but and then you're like, oh my God, but it works.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Like, at least to me, it does. It's like, no, this makes sense.
I know. So with your pitta types, you know, there's that oily, sharp, hot, intense. It's an acidic environment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first thing you start to see is an acid stomach, like an acidic feeling in the gut.
Yeah,
the person might be overheating at times. And there can definitely be like that intensity. So it could be like a competitiveness or obsessiveness, workaholicness, you know, like those things becoming like more than is tenable, you know?
Yeah.
So we get like acid and heat in the body, but then there's also the real mental mind component as well with pitta that can tip us off to imbalance. Like when I lived in Boston, I would always notice, road rage in August, like worse, and door slamming and road rage in the end of August, which is like, it's like when the heat's been accumulating, you know, in the city and like in the body for a couple months, and people just have on a hot day, short fuse. People have a short fuse, you know?
For sure.
Yes. I used to notice that, oh, the friendliness is, it's not here there for this few weeks. So your pitta types would then, you know, we'd give them thing. We would kind of try to remove too much ferments or too much alcohol, too much spicy food, too much salt, you know, and give them more cucumbers. Find foods that are calming and cooling for them. A lot of it with pitta does, you get great results when you just remove some of the acidic foods.
Yeah,
that's the thing there that's hard to get around. And like coffee is a big problem. You know, so if you're having cocktails at night, coffee in the morning, that's like you bookended your day with beverages, you know, and that's such a common thing. And then stress is also acidic, you know. cortisol and adrenaline increase the heat in the body. So a lot of people are moving around in states of aggravated pitta for sure. And with the kapha, it's that mucus, you know, that we look for. And so interestingly, there is naturally a lot of mucus in the stomach. It protects the stomach from the fire, you know? So that's the first place we might notice an accumulation. So a person would feel not hungry, just not that hungry. Like the digestive fire is like asleep kind of a feeling. That's an early sign. And then we might notice congestion in the nasal passage, in the lung, or also something like a sluggishness of the circulation. So that could show up as like swelling of, you know, hands and feet, or swelling of legs, you know, or that kind of a thing. So it's like excess water. So it's either going to be moisture, or we might also see it like in the body as different parts of the body swelling. Yeah. And the appetite's the big one. There is a kapha type will, when they eat mucus forming foods like cold dairy, you know, like ice cream or cold milk, or, you know, things like that, or too much cheese, too much meat. Because meat is very heavy. So these things, if you have too much of it, it just kills that the digestive fire. And that's when that feeling of heaviness in the stomach when they eat anything will start to happen. Where your vata type is going to get all windy, your pitta type is going to get acidic, and then your kapha type, it gets like heavy, dense feeling in the stomach. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love it. Like, I could listen to you talk about it all day long. And it's like reminding me, I'm like, yeah, I should probably, like, I feel like I haven't revisited a lot of my materials in a while. So I feel like it's time to probably dust off your three books and take a look at them again, because it's been a little while. Just maybe refresh some summer recipes and see what else, because they're really helpful books. Before we wrap up, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the Veda Institute. And your work there?
Ayurvedic Living Institute. Yeah. I was just thinking when you were talking, like, I also have, you know, hour and a half long seasonal workshops. So if somebody feels overwhelmed by like a book and just wants like summer, I have like a summer self-care workshop, for example, you know, that people go to ayurvedicliving.institute, and it'll be, you go under self-care, and there's basically a workshop for every season.
Yep, perfect.
That could be a nice place also to start. Somebody could just watch the summer one, you know, and just start there and see if something hits you, you know. And there's years of content on that website. I know it's a lot to look at. So I think for people who are newer, there's the Intro to Ayurveda course, or just catch a seasonal workshop and see where it takes you. Or there's something like sleep. You know, as a workshop on improving sleep, and just sometimes like a simple topic is a great way to just get into it.
Yeah. Sleep's another really important self-care aspect that is often ignored.
Oh yeah. We could
and overlooked.
Yeah. Oh, it's so important. You know, the texts say that life and death depend upon sleep.
I believe it.
Very clearly, just that's the line. It's like happiness and unhappiness, life and death depend upon sleep.
Yeah. That's pretty serious stuff right there. I never sacrifice sleep.
Me neither.
Oh my God. I feel terrible if I do. But so where, last but certainly not least, so you want to say your website again and just social media handles and where folks can find you?
Yeah, thank you. Ayurvedicliving.institute. That's where the self-care classes. And then on Instagram, it's kateodonnell.ayurveda. So I post a recipe every month, and then you can sign up for my newsletter through there. And I send out a recipe every month as well. So usually it's like what I'm cooking on, you know, what I'm working on at that time. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure that that's all linked in the episode notes and your website and links to your books and all of that amazing content. So thank you. And thank you so much for joining me here.
Yeah. It's great to see you again after so long.
That was such a fabulous conversation. packed with info. And I know we've talked about Ayurveda on other podcast episodes here. I'll be sure to have those linked in the notes. But Kate really emphasized and highlighted so many of the important qualities, which I think make Ayurveda pretty awesome. And right from the get-go, she emphasized the idea that self-care is simple. Keep it simple, and a little goes a long way. Perfection. And I'm definitely going to try that quinoa salad this summer and her coolers. They sounded so yummy. I'll be sure to post about it when I do. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're feeling more energized and empowered. If you liked what you heard today, subscribe and leave a review for this podcast on your preferred player. Follow along on Facebook and Instagram at Dr. MC Self Care and Dr. MC's Self Care Cabaret on LinkedIn. You can also visit my website, drmcselfcare.com, for the latest updates and to sign up for Cast Party, my e-newsletter. And if you're interested in having me present to an audience near you, email info@drmcselfcare.com. Thanks again. Stay well and do good.